Yeah,
Me too.
made about 7 trips to Bosnia. I got that down. I got Pivo down, and I got Zhivali down, because when you have a Pivo, you need to go Zhivali. But that's about it. So I went on these trips with the New Jersey Synod into Bosnia, and we did camps. They were called friendship camps, and we went to a different town on a different day, and we ran these camps for elementary and middle school children. Fortunately, we brought along translators, so we were able to have a good line of communication. But the translators weren't with us 24 hours a day. When we were in Sarajevo and we did camps that were based in the general area of Sarajevo, we stayed at the homes of some war widows, and there were no translators. And so there was a lot of pointing, nodding, smiling, and grunting, because that's the best I could do. They would ask questions about I don't know what, and I'd be going through this book trying to figure out what it was, but I could never really hear the words well enough to be able to figure out how they were spelled in English, and so it was a complete failure. But I do know good morning, dobro jutro, Pekose, how are you? I got that down. Because we need words to be able to communicate. We need to be able to have the same language to be able to communicate fully. We can communicate using grunts, points, nods, and other things like that. We can draw little pictures, which is another thing I resorted to doing. But you can't communicate very well that way. Having a common language is really an important thing. But it doesn't always work very well. For instance, what would you say if I said to you, and I have to work at this, Jens want to go to Sliverty to go pick up some jumbo and that? Yeah, I know. Anybody else who didn't live in Western Pennsylvania have any idea what I just said? What I just said is, would you like to go to East Liberty with me to the Giant Eagle, which is a grocery store chain, to pick up some bologna? For you see, in Pittsburgh, there was a chain of delicatessens known as Isley's. They're the ones who came up with the Klondike bar. They would sell an enormous roll of bologna that they nicknamed Jumbo. Jumbo bologna. And so it just became Jumbo when you were getting bologna. You can go to almost any area of the country and you can be left wondering exactly what the person is saying when you get into these very local colloquialisms in terms of how we've kind of twisted and moved the English language. What means one thing in one area of the country is going to mean another thing in another area of the country. But even with that, it is our words that allow us to be able to finally communicate clearly with one another, most of the time. Other times we fall into that whole Cool Hand Luke scenario of what we have here is a failure to communicate. And everybody knows that well. Words aren't only important for communicating, words are important for us in terms of establishing value within a relationship. This started out long before we were ever around. A good example of that's found in today's Old Testament lesson, the value of the word. I will be your God, and you will be my people. And from you I will make a great nation. Words of promise. A covenant is established between Abraham and this God Yahweh, or this God El Shaddai. This God who comes forth from nowhere, seemingly, to promise this old man and this old woman a family. A promise that took, from what we can tell, around 25 years to come to fruition. A promise that was laughed at. A promise that was looked at suspiciously. And sometimes a promise that wasn't even valued very much because so much time had taken place. And yet, this God was true to the promise. Because these two elderly people were able to create a son when not doing so was really possible. And from that son came the great nation, the people of God. A word of promise, a word of covenant. It used to be in the ancient Middle East that your word was your bond. That was your covenant. In the ancient Middle East, if you said you were going to do something, you did something. Even if you said it mistakenly, you still were really set forth to be able to do it because that was the understanding that no human being was any greater than their word. And so everyone stood behind their word. This covenant that Abraham made with God, there's no recollection of anything being placed down in writing, have it notarized, and have three witnesses sign it to be able to make sure that it's validated within a court of law and then stored away somewhere in a safe deposit box so you can pull it out and say, hey, look, you signed right here. This is what you said you were going to do. Let's get to it. Just their word. I will be your God. You will be my people. It is one of the original promises from God. It is a promise that carries over from the Old Testament into the New Testament, from that old book of promise into this new book of promise, where the promise now is one that is wrapped around this. What we understand to be the cross of Christ, this instrument that created death, this instrument that brought death into life through a word of promise. A word of hope. A promise that we've wrapped our lives around. A promise that brings us to this place today. A promise that calls us to a greater sense of responsibility in terms of the human community and the things that we do and how we act and what we say. A promise that binds us not only to God, but a promise that instills within us a sense of calling to be good to our word. To be people who live our lives in a way that we are seen as those who do exactly what they promise to do, who do the things they say they will do, who accomplish the things that they set out to do, not looking for loopholes or excuses, but understanding that sometimes the hard way is the only way, and it may be God's way, and that's the way we're called. To be able to set out in life the way God has intended, to be able to pick up that cross of Christ and to carry it within our lives. To be able to do those things that God has called us to do. Because it is part of our covenant. To be able to stand forth with Christ. And to be able to stand as examples within this world as what a follower of Christ would be, willing to pick up that cross. Willing to live our lives in a manner that the world can understand exactly what a Christian is. Not looking for some kind of loophole to be able to get out of doing it. Not coming up with some kind of excuse why we couldn't accomplish it. But rather, focusing our lives on what God has given us. And understanding what it is that we might offer in return. The innumerable blessings we each hold, those things that God has given us that made us uniquely who we are those things that God calls forth for us to be able to use as we take on the challenges within this world. But the beauty of the covenant that we hold with God is one that has a fail-safe built in. Because within God's knowledge of who we are is the understanding that we will fail. We won't be good to our word. We won't do those things that we claim we should do. We won't act according to the ways God would have us behave. And yet, it doesn't nullify the covenant whatsoever, but rather, it sets us up for that greatest gift of all that we have, the forgiveness that God offers through our failures. Through our inability to be able to uphold this covenant, for our inability to constantly live our lives in the manner for which God would ask us. And so while we attempt each and every day to bear that cross, to be faithful in our following and loyal in what we do, to be able to honor this God of promise, we do so with the joy of knowing that when we do stumble and when we do fall, that God's immeasurable love remains there for us to be able to pick us up, be able to dust us off, and to be able to send us on our way again as God's forgiven children. Understanding that when we don't place our trust where it needs to be placed, God remains faithful to us, always present within our lives, continually blessing us, and standing firm and faithful in that covenant that He has made with us. Amen.